Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short head.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
On today's show, we're going to revisit World Trade Center Building 7. There have been two new researchers who have spoken out recently about World Trade Center 7, and we're going to hear from them today. But first, for those of you who may not know, World Trade Center 7 was the third skyscraper to collapse in New York City on 9/11, and it wasn't hit by a plane. It fell at approximately 5:20 on the afternoon of September 11, 2001. It was a 47-story building that came down in 6.5 seconds. There were eyewitnesses who reported hearing a countdown leading up to its collapse. The BBC and CNN reported that it had collapsed before it actually did. The building housed the CIA, the Securities and Exchange Commission, other government agencies, and Mayor Rudy Giuliani's Emergency Management Center. The 9/11 Commission report did not look into World Trade Center 7 and only mentioned it once in a footnote. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, was tasked with investigating how World Trade Center 7 came down. And their conclusion was that the building collapsed due to fire. Never mind the fact that no steel-framed building has ever collapsed due to fire. The architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth have been continuously challenging NIST on its report of the collapse of World Trade Center 7, NIST won't release much of its work. Barry Jennings worked for the City of New York and went to the Emergency Management Center in World Trade Center 7 on the morning of 9/11, but nobody was there. In his attempt to get out, he reported walking over dead bodies, and he said that all the time he was hearing all types of explosions going off on the floors below him. NIST interviewed Jennings, but has not made their interview public. Although only 53 years old, Barry Jennings reportedly died after several days in a hospital on August 19, 2008. This was just 2 days before NIST had its August 21st press briefing to announce the draft version of its final report on World Trade Center 7. Professor David Ray Griffin has written at least 10 books about 9/11, and one of them that came out in 2010 is called The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Final Official Report About 9/11 is Unscientific and False. I highly recommend this book. And this is what Tony Zambodi, a mechanical engineer and former member of the U.S. Navy, has to say about this book. Quote, Professor Griffin's meticulous dissection of NIST's World Trade Center 7 report shows just why its theory of fire-induced progressive collapse is wholly inadequate and essentially fraudulent, and why the actual demise of this huge building could have been brought down only by intentional demolition, which could have been set up and carried out only by domestic forces, unquote. So now let's turn to our two speakers being featured in today's program. The first one is Peter Ketchum, a former NIST employee who has recently spoken out at a December 2016 event in Massachusetts. He's introduced here by Ted Walter of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
The next speaker I'm going to introduce briefly, his name is Peter Ketchum. He is a former employee of NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I'll just give you a very brief background. In August of this year, I, along with a few other authors, two engineers and a physicist, many of them you may know, Stephen Jones, Robert Coral, and Tony Zambodi, published an article in the magazine of the European Physical Society. It's called Europhysics News, and this came out in August. It was called 15 Years Later on the Physics of High-Rise Building Collapses. And this article ended up being viewed now more than 350,000 times, gained a lot of traction, and a lot of controversy was generated from it. As a result of that controversy, the editors of Europhysics News posted a statement kind of explaining their position and inviting any letters to the editor. And so a month or two later, when the next issue of the magazine was published, in the magazine was a letter from Peter Ketchum, this former employee of NIST. And in this letter, as he explains, he did not work on the World Trade Center investigation. And recently this year, he started looking into it and very quickly came to the conclusion that the NIST investigation, I'm just going to put it softly for now and I'll let him fill in the blank, but was not done properly and flew in the face of everything that he knew and his experience of working at NIST. And so I'm going to hand it over to him. And I just want to say that we are very grateful that he has chosen to speak out. And we view this as one step forward. I'm confident that he's going to be a very powerful voice for this pursuit of truth. And so here we go. Peter, thank you very much.
First, I would like to thank Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth for their generosity in bringing me here today. And I would especially like to mention and thank Ted Walter for his intelligence, competence, ability, talent, and commitment. And Ted and I have communicated a fair amount recently, and I could not ask for a better person to work with. Second, I want to say that my thoughts today are my thoughts, and I accept full responsibility for them. As Ted mentioned, I was a member of the NIST technical staff during the period 1997 to 2011. I initially joined the High Performance Systems and Services Division and later became a member of what was, at the time, the Mathematical and Computational Sciences Division of the Information Technology Laboratory. My fellow NIST employees were among the finest and most intelligent people with whom I have ever worked. I did not contribute to the NIST World Trade Center investigation or reports, but I do recognize the names of many who did contribute, and I had some degree of contact or involvement, even if only minimal, with a few of those contributors. A few months ago, based on a conversation with a friend who has no connection to NIST, I began to read some of those NIST World Trade Center reports, including NIST NC Star 1 and NC Star 1A. As I watched several documentaries contradicting the NIST reports and presenting very lucid arguments for controlled demolition, I quickly became furious. First, I was furious with myself. How could I have worked at NIST all those years and not have noticed this before? Second, I was furious with NIST. The NIST I knew was intellectually open, non-defensive, willing to consider competing explanations, and enthusiastic about presenting the details of its research to any interested party. The more I investigated, the more apparent it became that NIST had reached a predetermined conclusion that refused, avoided, and dismissed the evidence. Among the most egregious examples is the explanation for the collapse of World Trade Center 7 as a Rube Goldberg sequence of unlikely events culminating in the almost symmetrical collapse of a steel frame building into its own footprint at freefall acceleration. I believe that NIST is one of the crown jewels of the U.S. federal government and an organization of staggering brilliance. But with respect to the World Trade Center investigation, I think that something went very wrong. I don't know what, but something. I could list all the reasons why the NIST World Trade Center reports don't add up, but others have already done so in extensive detail, and there is little that I could add. What I can do, however, is express some thoughts based on common sense, intuition, and experience drawn from my years at NIST. There are 5 points I'd like to mention. First, in my opinion, NIST is not fooling us anymore. NIST has painted itself into a corner while the walls of evidence and reason close in. One need only read the Europhysics news article and NIST's response to see that. My understanding is that police detectives use the term guilty demeanor to describe the dodging and weaving of a guilty party that desperately claims innocence. One does not need any technical background to see the display of guilty demeanor in the various NIST presentations regarding the World Trade Center investigation and reports. This is especially true of the investigation leaders, who repeatedly evade, dismiss, and obfuscate their way through incomplete and nonsensical explanations. It is not my intention to attack these individuals in making my point, as they may in fact have been under duress. But if the NIST World Trade Center investigation and reports prove false, then they are culpable nonetheless. Second, national security concerns are their own worst enemy. The excuse has worn thin that evidence or information must be withheld due to national security concerns. The irony is that the secretive cloak of national security has itself become a serious threat to our pursuit of happiness with the corruption and dishonesty that it breeds. If NIST truly believes in the veracity of its investigation, then it should openly share all evidence, data, models, computations, and other relevant information unless very specific and compelling reasons are otherwise provided. National security concerns and public safety concerns do not stand in isolation. They participate in a balance with accountability. Third, gingerly approaching the water and dipping in a toe does not constitute a swim in the ocean. In its reports, NIST makes a great show of copious details leading to collapse initiation, and then stops short just when it becomes interesting. The remainder of the explanation is a perfunctory statement that building collapse is inevitable and obvious. It is easy to see through this tactic as an evasion of prickly arguments and an avoidance of inconvenient evidence. Fourth, in response to any challenges, NIST typically provides curt explanations from its public affairs office. I was at NIST for 14 years, and I saw how this game was played. The strategy is to stand as an impervious monolith while also tightly controlling communications. There were many contributors to the NIST World Trade Center investigation. Why not let them openly answer questions in their own voice, with the depth of knowledge and level of detail that follows from the nuts and bolts of their research? If the NIST investigation and reports are sincere and genuine, then there is nothing to fear and nothing to hide. Fifth, honesty sooner is better than regret later. Awareness is growing of the disconnect between the NIST World Trade Center reports and logical reasoning. The recent Europhysics news article is a good example. Due to the nature of communication in our current world, that awareness may increase approximately exponentially. Why not NIST blow the whistle on itself now, while there is still time? The wounds of 9/11 have remained unhealed for too long. Those wounds are now festering, rotting, and infected. When the physical body is wounded, the first step is to wash out those wounds with hot soapy water. The process is painful, but the pain does not last, and the worst of it occurs at the start. Truth is the hot and soapy water with which we wash out the wounds of 9/11. With respect to the World Trade Center investigation, the official narrative of 9/11 has begun to unravel, and that unraveling may accelerate. One need only look at recent events, such as the appearance of the Europhysics news article, to see that unraveling in action. As a result, there may be a sequence of painful revelations. We may find that the United States federal government may not be quite the benevolent protector that we thought it was. But the wounds of 9/11 are unlikely to heal amid lies, deception, and misinformation. That is why truth is so important. Finally, I would like to respectfully say and suggest to you that your feelings are not the truth. Your feelings are important and beautiful, but your feelings only tell you how you feel, not what is true. And as I talk to a variety of people about 9/11 and the official narrative, I see in some cases a great deal of difficulty to consider or even accept some of the darker possibilities behind what has happened. And feelings are often a large part of that. So I'm simply saying to consider that although your feelings are important and wonderful and should be respected, that your feelings are not the truth. And finally, I would like to simply summarize by saying, the truth is where our healing lies. Thank you.
And again, you were just listening to Peter Ketchum, a former NIST employee. To see the video of this speech, you can go to YouTube and search for Peter Ketchum. And Ketchum is spelled K-E-T-C-H-A-M. And the next speaker is Professor Leroy Hulsey, a structural engineer from the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. He and his top students have been studying the collapse of World Trade Center 7, and this is him speaking about his research at the Justice in Focus conference in New York City in September of 2016. It's a bit technical at the beginning, but that doesn't last long. He's introduced here by architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And here they are.
To go into a greater effort to understand what couldn't have happened in this building for its destruction, I'd like to bring up one of the top forensic structural engineers in the country from the University of Alaska, Professor Leroy Hulsey, structural engineer, PhD. Professor Hulsey?
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here today, and thank you all for giving me the opportunity to be here. So I want to just kind of give you a little bit of an insight of who I am and give you some background before I get into this presentation. I'm actually also a licensed structural engineer. I have been in the business some 40 years. I've worked as an expert at the Avenues of America building, the United Nations building, the Dean Dome in North Carolina, and a number of other structures around the country. So what I'm bringing to this presentation is the fact that I've done a lot of work on structural investigations. And so when I was asked to do this, to investigate the collapse of the World Trade Center 7, I thought it was quite an honor. And I've put together a team that I feel is really, really good. Dr. Fang Shao, who is a postdoctoral researcher who did his PhD under my work. And then Zili Kwan, who is a PhD student now. And because of this project, I've redirected his research effort, and he's going to be looking at fires on high-rise buildings and particularly steel structures. So that being said, let me take you to this first slide and focus your attention onto the blue outline. And we're looking at the plan view of the floor 13. Column 79 is not identified there, but you see column 76 and 78. And if you remember that picture of the building falling a moment ago, if we rotated this 180 degrees and put the blue on the left and the stuff on the right, that blue area represents the NIST's approximation of connections for this building. The portion on the left of this plan view, they chose not to put any of the connections into their finite element model, which indicates that the section to the left is much stiffer than the section to your right. Furthermore, they didn't approximate the stiffness of the connectors on the exterior part of the building. Now, what does that physically mean to you and I? What it means is when you heat up a bar, the bar is going to try to elongate. And it will elongate without resistance, no matter what, unless there's some place that's stiffer than another. If it's fixed on one end and free on the other, it's going to move to the right, imagining fixed being on your left. If I was to put fixed on your right and free on your left, it would expand to your left. Now, if I fix it on both ends, it can literally tear itself apart with a fairly low temperature. So here's the situation on this building. When NIST modeled it, they did not model it correctly because there are connections everywhere. And so that means part of this building was treated more stiff than the other part. And if remember when you saw the thing come down, what happened is part of the building was coming down differently than the other part. That should have given them a clue right away. That's not what really happened. Take a look at this picture right here. See that red line down? The left part is where they modeled the connections. The right part, they did not. So the left part, when it starts to fall, is coming down fairly rapidly, but the right part is really, really stiff. And so it's not anywhere simulating what really happened in the real building. So that immediately should have told them that this model that they were trying to use to argue that fire brought this building down was wrong right away. And from the first time I saw this, I was wondering, what in the world is wrong with this model? And it wasn't until a few weeks ago we identified the real cause of this, you know, and that's through this process, because we've modeled every connection. So let's examine the NIST approach for a moment. They've said there's more than 5.5 inches of movement at that girder to push it off the bearing, and so that the column was no longer resisted there. Well, you can imagine that that being real, real stiff on one side, the amount of movement that was occurring was going to accumulate over that length, whereas actually the more stiffer part is near column 79. It didn't move hardly at all. So the issues that led to that 5.5 inch movement primarily were due to the fact that they didn't model the connections properly. And there's some question in my mind about even in a place where they did model the connections, they were not connected and properly substructured within the model itself. I realize I may be using words that you're not familiar with, and I apologize for that. But what I'm really trying to say is that in the real structure, they had bolts and they had these connections putting beams to girders and so forth. And on part of their model, they didn't include those. On the other part, they did, or they attempted to. We did everywhere. So the issues that led to the 5.5 inches of movement and more, it was actually more than that, was they treated the girders as non-composite. In other words, what they did when they looked at the thermal expansion, they didn't include the concrete slab in it. That was totally wrong. They separated the connection modeling. That was wrong. They missed the wide flange stiffeners. That was wrong. So giving you kind of a comparative narrative of what we did versus what they did, our floor framing steel connections were addressed by using the word springs, that basically there's some resistance to the bolt and how that is resisting movement up and down, and there's some resistance to rotation and all that kind of stuff. We addressed that in these connectors. So in this table, you'll see they did it partially, in other words, over part of the floor system. We did it everywhere. Exterior steel framing connections were included by us, but were not by them. In other words, there was a sense of stiffness that was not correct. Girder to column stiffener plates were included by us, not by them. The floor composite with beams, we said they were composite. We also said they were not composite. We wanted to look at all extremes to make a comparison between whether we could simulate what they did or not. The floors with composite beams and girders were examined by us, yes, not by them. And by the way, I think you can imagine that even if they were not composite, the concrete deck is fairly heavy. It's going to be sitting on the beams and the girders. And so to slide the concrete with respect to the steel, there's a lot of friction. And so it's going to take a huge amount of effort to make that happen, to slide without those two working together. And our analysis shows that that couldn't have happened. Okay? The thermal expansion of the concrete deck was included by us. It was not by them. Thermal conductivity expansion for the material properties, we included what we believe to be the aggregate that was used in the construction. And the aggregate type is significantly affects the thermal conductivity and the thermal expansion of the concrete. So we tried to make sure that we had an understanding of what may have occurred truly on that day. The thermal horizontal movement of column 79, it was more than 5.5 inches. I gave him credit here. It was more than that. But it was less than 2 inches by us. And let me also share with you this. we had a quality control program on every single day. My doctoral graduate and my PhD student, we meet every single day. We talk about what we've done. We criticize each other's effort. We make sure that we can justify every piece scientifically. And so as part of this, we use two different computer finite element programs, two different ones. And we did that for a reason. We cross-checked each other's work through looking at each other's models, and then we also ran them using two different programs. One of these gave us 1.9 plus inches, and the other was 1.85 inches instead of the 2 inches. That's why I said it's... So both programs gave us less than 2 inches.
Dr. Kelsey, let me ask you a question. You listed here for us 8 or 10 very specific things that they didn't do or that they did incorrectly. Based on your own professional judgment, do you think that that falls within the realm of simple incompetence, or do you believe that this demonstrates a pattern that is so gross that it had to have been done intentionally?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how anybody could think that this was a cover-up and know anything about finite elements and know structural engineering to think that they could get away with that.
Right. But if one of your PhD students submitted this to you, would you have flunked them?
Yes. So my answer to you today is that the fire did not bring this building down.
Let me ask this. If you could, on a scale of 1 to 100, what do you think the possibility is of this particular building failing with the data with regard to these specific fires? On a scale of 1 to 100, how probable do you think it is, or how possible do you think it is, that this building could have collapsed simply because of the fires?
Zero.
My reaction to what you've had to say is, of course. In fact, as soon as you were given the problem of trying to just study, you know, why this building went down, it seems like you didn't really need to do anything. You could have looked at the video and seen and come to a conclusion at that time. Wouldn't you agree that that's true?
I would agree that I knew that there was something wrong with that computer model.
Okay.
I did not know whether it was a fire-related issue or not.
All right. What I'm asking you is, you knew that that was controlled demolition as soon as you saw it the first time.
I can't say that, and I won't even say that yet today.
Okay, so you were allowing for the possibility that that building came down as a result of something other than controlled demolition. Is that what you're saying?
What I said from the day one when I took this on is that I may not be able to tell you what brought it down, but I'll tell you what didn't bring it down.
It seems to me that it's obvious simply from looking at the video that that's controlled demolition. Dan Rather didn't make that up, because he was being creative. He was reacting to his knowledge of life and his views of these things happening for as many times as he'd seen them. And I want to know if that was not your state of mind when you took on this problem.
Let me be very clear. I have a requirement to put away whatever my feelings might be and present to you pure science on what we're going to end up with. So we're not done with this. What we're going to look at are a lot of possible scenarios that may bring this building down, including pulling out columns as we move forth in the next few months. I will be able to tell you when I get through this process a lot more about this issue. And then it'll be based on a science answer, not on my feelings.
And again, that was Professor Leroy Hulsey, structural engineer at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, discussing his ongoing research into the collapse of World Trade Center 7. To learn more about Dr. Hulsey's work, and to learn more about World Trade Center 7, you can go to the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth website, which is ae911truth.org. And this concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.